You're back with Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
We're talking about how much I love soccer during the break.
Yeah, you love it.
Yeah, it's my favorite.
Sport number one.
The Astros did beat the Mariners, Paul's side chick, last night, 3-0. So it's a good game. Yordan Alvarez had a fun solo homer. Jeremy Pena adding a two-run shot.
Jeremy Pena.
Eddie Vedder is with us today on the program.
Every time Jeremy Pena does something, Vanessa, I'm sorry. I can't help myself.
I want to say Pena Mania.
When I used to host with Jeremy Branham over at the other station from time to time, I did the same damn thing. Jeremy Branham. I can't help it.
And now you can hear Jeremy after us.
That's true.
But this was a good game for the Astros. I think, you know, Jake Odorizzi has shown a lot of improvement. What were your thoughts? I know that this is a where your heart is tugged in two directions because it's the Seattle Mariners.
this is a more fun game for me where it's no one's blowing each other out. You're seeing some of the flashes of the team that you used to watch on a nightly basis, but the Astros ultimately win. Like, that's what I do want to happen going forward.
Yeah.
To circle back, a little time
in the hotel with the mistress.
Well, we went back home at night. We put our Astros hat back on.
Put the wedding ring back
on. You know, tucked the kids in, and everything was fine. There's an understanding, a shared understanding of me and my heart. It is in two places at once. Back to this. Odorizzi has shown some balls over the last two starts. And, you know, I will always respect somebody who responds well to adversity. He has really responded well to it, and he deserves a lot of credit for that. Is this going to last? I don't know. But, you know, we were pretty critical of him for those two starts that he had before that, and deservedly so. He pitched horribly. But to bounce back in this manner, to go almost seven innings, to really just keep the Mariners from doing anything of consequence. Like, when they turned the bat on the ball, they weren't making really hard contact with anything out there. It was a really nice performance by him. And look, you don't expect this from him on a night-to-night basis.
Right.
Like with Framber Valdez, there's an element of inconsistency with Odorizzi, but there was a stretch last year where he pitched very well, and hopefully that is something that he can once again do, because with the way that the Astros aren't scoring still, 1-for-9 with runners in scoring position last night.
The offense is lacking.
They need pitchers to pitch well. And for the most part this year, the pitchers have done a pretty good job.
Jake Odorizzi last night talking about some of the feedback that he has received from his teammates and how that has been super helpful.
So I have a lot of great teammates that have helped me between then and now. Yeah, I got some great feedback from Breggy after my bullpen in Toronto, which was, you know, it's always helpful to get hitters' feedback. And, you know, he looks off of me and he gives me feedback. And then JV, you know, with some pitching information and mindset information, was before the Texas start. And it's really kind of opened my eyes to a lot of different things. So having those type of guys in a clubhouse is, you know, obviously they're great players, but they're invaluable when it comes to, you know, helping out teammates.
It does help to have guys who have been through as much as the Astros have been over all the years. I mean, if you're on the Astros and you can't deal with adversity, you have how many different guys in that clubhouse that can tell you what it's like to go play for a team
right. That
everyone hates, that everyone wants to see fail, that every team they go up against for a time probably wanted to throw balls at their heads because they felt like they
even if they
cheated.
Were cheating too.
Right. That's true. So I think that this is a good spot to be in, and I'm glad too that this is not one of those clubhouses where players turn against other players. That does happen across baseball, and that's the one thing I think you've seen as a constant, even with some guys leaving, is that the core of the Astros clubhouse has been, I think, just a really good unit that's kept a bunch of different cliques, I would imagine, that you would see naturally generate in other baseball clubhouses together. And that's not easy to do in a sport that's as international as baseball in so many different international ways, whether it's, you know, Asia, or you're talking about players from the Caribbean, or, you know, just a white or a black player. It's a totally different kind of area. And this team, for whatever reason, has always found a way to put to just keep everything in a way where you're like, wow, I don't know how they do it, but they all seem to get along and they have each other's back.
Jeremy Pena adding that two-run shot as well. It's been super impressive for the rookie, who obviously had to step up and fill some big shoes. But according to Jake Odorizzi, Jeremy Pena has done a good job of just chilling out and being himself.
He came into his role his way. He didn't try to be somebody that he wasn't. We know how phenomenal he was with the glove. Obviously, he's got tremendous power, but he's really starting to learn how to work at bats, make adjustments to pitches, and just growing as a big leaguer, and that's what's going to make him a big leaguer for a very long time. So, you know, it's a big credit to him. He's got big shoes to fill coming in after Carlos, but he's done it the right way. He hasn't tried to do stuff that he's not capable of doing, and, you know, he plays his game very well, and I don't think we need any adjustments out of him. Just continue to go, put him in the lineup every day, let him pick it, and, you know, he's put a lot of great at-bats together, and you can see the adjustments happening right before your eyes, which is really great to see.
High praise for Jeremy Pena.
Pena has shown power to this point. He obviously is pretty capable in the field. Still not in love with the arm, but it doesn't seem to matter when he's got the range that he has. And he has been a very pleasant surprise to me. And I'm willing to admit that, hey, the Astros made the right call for now with Carlos Correa. They're probably going to miss having someone like Correa come the postseason.
And yeah, that's what I was thinking.
It is important to note, too, that the Minnesota Twins are off to a pretty damn good start to open the year. And I would imagine that Carlos Correa's presence in that clubhouse has something to do with that, even if he was off to a very slow start at the plate. But Pena has been exactly what you needed him to be thus far. And if you're talking about a massive savings that you were able to create along the way, you could see why. You got to be really, really unemotional to be a general manager, to be an owner in baseball, and this is a move that is looking better and better by the day.
I think we look back on this and see that although it would have been cool to keep Carlos Correa for a year or so, and people compared the numbers, crunched the numbers, what could have you kept Springer for versus what could have you know, all everybody's going to move around the cap to try to fit the narrative of the players they wish they could have kept. But this was a bold move by Jim Crane and James Click.
Yeah.
Not only what Carlos brought on the field, it sounds cliche, but how much the fans loved him, how much he stood up for the Astros through that scandal. It was a bold move, but so far Jeremy Pena certainly working out. Jose Altuve, in his first game back in the lineup, went 0-for-3 with a walk. He, of course, had been out since April 19th with that hamstring injury. Are you worried about Altuve? I didn't expect anything magical his first night back, but hammies, I can be serious.
Yeah, hamstrings, look, that's something that can re-aggravate over and over and over and over again, and that's something that I would expect to happen. I think at some point this year he will probably deal with another hamstring injury. How many times do you see this with wide receivers? And when you're talking about a batter exploding out of the batter's box, trying to run out an infield single or something like that, that's where it can happen a lot. Or if you're just roaming from left or to your right as a second baseman or something like that, too. He's getting up there in age, and I wonder. I do wonder about, hey, is this something that could re-aggravate itself by the end of the season? We will see, of course. But, yeah, if you're not thinking about this with Jose Altuve, I guess you are a very, very, very patient, non-overreactionary person like myself. Because when it comes to baseball, damn it, I am overreactionary. You
Nothing
know?
Wrong with that.
Like the Minnesota Twins, best team in the American League. Some are saying it. Am I saying it? I don't know. I could be.
Speaking of overreactionary, we'll get to the Celtics in a minute. Let's start with Heat 76ers. No Joel Embiid last night. Harden, not shocking, did not have a good performance. 16 points. According to ESPN stats and info, it's the 11th straight playoff game for James Harden where he scores under 25 points. This guy's just not getting it done.
Yeah, and I mean, are you surprised?
No, not at all. But some people thought that he was going to dominate.
Are you reveling in it?
A little bit. Not as much as you, though.
I'm just asking the questions.
I'm not reveling in it, but Paul Gallant maybe a little bit.
I am not petty. I'm not.
Is that what your therapist told you to repeat? Are those the manifestations and the...
Listen, I just like watching basketball.
Affirmations? Are you like the millennial girls doing affirmations? I am not petty. I am worthy. I will not be gaslit. I will not be toxic.
I have post-it notes on the mirror in my bathroom. I look at this and I say, like, you will not say, I hope James Harden has 17 turnovers in a game and 2 points and fouls out and gets flagrant fouled by somebody. I'm not hoping for those things. No.
No, never.
I would never do that.
But yeah, so now the Heat, Miami Heat, of course, lead the series 1-0. The Bucks lead the Celtics 1-0 heading into tonight's game. How do you, our resident Celtics fan, feel about this game?
Bad. That's all I have to say.
Great.
Really?
Wow. More NBA
analysis. Well, what else am I supposed to say, Vanessa? They tried to bully Giannis, and Giannis was like, haha, that was funny. You know, it's You're a mosquito.
But you don't think the Celtics get swept, do you?
I don't, but I mean...
Yeah, I don't think they do either.
Milwaukee didn't play that well in game one, and Marcus Smart played awful. I mean, I guess you could say the Celtics played their worst game, but I feel awful.
The Bucks were playing big boy basketball for sure.
Mm-hmm. Literally big boy. They're just bigger than everybody on Boston.
Large. Coming up on Vanessa and Gallant, I'm very excited for this discussion. How much should taxpayers fund stadiums? And we're going to talk about the Astrodome. What the hell is up with the Astrodome? Plus... the Hugh Jackson investigation revealed. That's next.
This is ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. When the lights come on, when the crowd goes wild. Real fun sports. Vanessa and Gallant continues on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
All right, so interesting articles coming out over the last couple of months about the Pegula family in Buffalo and their attempt to build a new stadium. They did reach a deal for that, and it set a record. Do you want to hear what the record is, Paul?
I guess it's probably going to make me mad the way that you're leading this question.
The Bills will have the most public money set toward the construction of a new stadium. According to the Buffalo News, the Bills will get a new $1.4 billion stadium. So the stadium itself is a big part of the story, says Yahoo. The second one is that the state of New York and Erie County is contributing $850 million to the construction costs.
If you get this much in public funding, someone in local government should go up in front of a microphone and call you a bunch of embarrassing pores that we are giving charity to. Because that's what's happening here. You own an NFL team. You can't build your own stadium. You have to beg for public funding to build it. I mean, if you want the new stadium, build it yourself. Period. You don't need a new stadium to survive in the NFL. Oh, unless you're the Washington football team and your stadium has like sewer leaks rampant throughout it and the field is an absolute dumpster fire.
But even in that case, the public shouldn't be paying for that much of it.
I agree. That should be all Daniel Snyder. This was once the most valuable team in the NFL. So I hate hearing this. I really do. I saw that yesterday, Vanessa, and it made me think locally about here. Remember in 2013... when we voted to demolish the Astrodome?
Yeah.
Okay. So this was during my time as a sports talk show host here in Houston. And I just remember thinking to myself, okay, there probably was a time where the Astrodome was incredible. I'm sure a lot of you guys have great memories growing up going to games in the Astrodome. But now it is just old abandoned house that's next door to NRG Stadium. It looks tiny. It looks like a wart. It looks gross. And in a city that has no zoning, I'm sure there are tons of people that are listening to me right now that live in a neighborhood where there's just one absolute dumpster fire of a house that's nearby that's probably driving your property value down. So you see that and you're like, why is this still here? Especially when in 2013, we voted to demolish the damn thing. Well, it turns out this guy named Ed Emmett, who used to be a Harris County judge.
This is a great story, by the way.
I was doing a radio show when we found out about this, and I was just like, why does Ed Emmett, who after the vote had happened to demolish the dome, Vanessa, I said, hey, Ed Emmett's a boob. They voted to destroy it. Stop.
So you called him a boob.
I did.
On air. Okay.
Now, to Ed Emmett's credit, he called into the show no later than 10 minutes later, and he actually was very nice, and we had a polite conversation, but I still was like, dude, no one wants to host an event in this decrepit dump that is essentially a rat kingdom laden with asbestos. And I guess
they haven't used it for anything.
Nothing. Nothing, Vanessa. And look, in 2018, somehow Ed Emmett, after that 2013 vote, found a way to get $100 million approved to pay to turn the Astrodome into a parking lot slash event center because of some weird misplaced nostalgia. Who would want to host something in there anymore? It's ugly. There's no, you can't even see any natural light. It's just this dump of a stadium. You want $100 million invested in it and probably public money to turn this into an event center. And I got to give credit to the person who came in afterwards, Elena Hidalgo, who basically was like, yeah, we're not doing this. So basically, since 2018, nothing has happened.
So she slashed his plan.
I don't know if she slashed it, but they just obviously they have not enacted on it. So the Astrodome just continues.
I'm very up on local politics.
To linger. Listen, this is one of the few things I am really up on.
Right.
Because I've always been like, look, we had great memories here. It's a dump and it looks ugly. I mean, it also takes up an alarmingly annoying amount of space at the Houston Rodeo that I have to walk around to get to the wine garden.
Yeah, they should do something with it. It's like poop or get off the pot.
Yeah, just get rid of it. Just get rid of it.
This does remind me of some of the other big stadiums that have happened. The one I think of course, was in Indianapolis. 86% of the bill for one of the most expensive stadiums in the United States. That was Lucas Oil Stadium. Total cost of $720 million. So now you're seeing NFL venues and venues in general get into the billions. I mean, it is expensive to build something now.
They don't all need these new stadiums, though. They feel like, oh, well, we need the new stadium. And guess what? You're getting towards the age with NRG Stadium.
That's a great point.
Where all of a sudden this is going to be considered by some people to be an old stadium. The Titan Stadium is not that old. The Titan Stadium that they're going to get a stadium for, I mean, that stadium, I think that stadium was built in 1999.
That guarantees them a Super Bowl?
Probably.
Yeah.
It's Nashville.
But that's the way that it's going, is that if you get a new stadium, you get a Super Bowl.
In certain cities.
You don't think Buffalo will get a Super Bowl?
They can't handle a Super Bowl. That's a small town.
So.
That's one of the smallest towns
that
in the NFL.
Green Bay.
Green Bay either. And who wants to go there?
Right.
Who wants to go there? I lived in Syracuse for college for 4 years. Guess how many times I went to Buffalo? Zero. Nope. Not going to do it. And honestly, I should have gone to a Bills game in retrospect. But that's the only reason that I would go. I don't want to go to see like a game between two generic teams. I would only want to go for the Buffalo flavor. I don't want to go for the international.
But that's one of the main arguments, is that when you get that new stadium, it almost guarantees that the city gets a Super Bowl.
If you're in a south enough place.
Right.
Right. Because, I mean, that's, you know, the Texans, NRG Stadium, then Reliance Stadium got a Super Bowl basically the year after it was built because the Texans were an expansion franchise and the new stadium was there too. So that was like a little sweetener for the Texans becoming an expansion team. And, you know, they've had two damn good Super Bowls here in Houston for what it's worth. I would love to see another one come back here. But it bothers me that these guys just feel no shame. Like, aren't you embarrassed at all to essentially come begging to the government for funding when you are likely some sort of rich oligarch who probably hates the idea of government red tape? And you're I need the red tape here, though.
They look at it as politics. They look at it as part of the game. And I think the way that they view it, especially the cities that are going to have a Super Bowl. So Buffalo wouldn't be in this conversation. But they look at it as, hey, I brought you a Super Bowl. You know?
Yeah.
Not saying that justifies it. But it is ironic to have billionaires begging people for money.
I created a job.
Right.
I gave a job to a guy who was walking up and down the aisles of the stadium handing out beers. He works 16 days. Wait, check that. He works 8 days a year because of me. I created a job. Like, you hear stuff like that, too. And it just is so annoying. Every single team does it. They hold these cities hostage, and the cities always back down. And the next thing you know, you're paying taxes not to fix like our crumbling infrastructure and a bunch of other stuff across the country. Right. No.
And remember when the Bills were plugging the media with like, maybe we'll move to Austin.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Speaking of morality in the NFL has cleared Hugh Jackson of any wrongdoing after Mary Jo White's investigation found that the allegations could not be substantiated. Quote, 60-day independent review by SEC chair, former U.S. attorney Mary Jo White.
So conspiracy. I'm going to put on a tinfoil hat
PETA.
Here. They are a deep fake, correct? You got to reset the PETA opinion every single time you bring it up.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, PETA's fake.
PETA is fake. And why? Because
meat companies started PETA to make vegetarians look ridiculous.
Okay.
And it worked.
Okay.
Sorry, go ahead.
I just need it explained every time because I think it's a great take.
Thank you.
My take here with my tinfoil hat on, the NFL is paying Mary Jo White to independently investigate these situations, but they don't want her to actually find anything. No, they only want to find things like, hey, did Tom Brady more probably than not deflate footballs? They
to
want
which
that.
He should have been suspended for a year.
No, absolutely not. It's one of the biggest travesties in American history. Yep. So
loved it.
So Daniel Snyder apparently also being investigated by Mary Jo White.
That should go well.
Well, I think it will, because I don't think that they want to find anything.
You know what actually may do Daniel Snyder in is the fact that he stole money from other billionaires.
Okay.
That may be the one, and I'm in a way supporting your point that all of the sexual harassment allegations I don't think are going to have mattered. The fact that he was basically trafficking cheerleaders and having naked pictures of them taken.
Yeah.
All of this. The only thing that seems to have elicited a serious response from the NFL was when he faked money coming from a Kenny Chesney concert instead of a game.
But, you know, Mary Jo White can't find anything with Hugh Jackson, who does not cover his tracks very well. If you take a look at some of the tweets that he had from his foundation, which may be a tax write-off of some sort. So you think about that. They can't find anything with Hugh, who is not a very smart man. Are you telling me that on top of that, like, you're going to really find something with Daniel Snyder? Because I think that the NFL wants to make it seem like they're looking into this, but they don't want to get to the bottom of this. You do not want to actually follow the money here, because they will for sure find worse things out.
And you know what came from the Daniel Snyder investigation? John Gruden being fired.
Yes, exactly.
That is what came from it.
So maybe that's what happens next. Like, they find another racially insensitive or homophobic or, I don't know, something else, like some anti-mask take that somebody had in an email, and that person's going to end up going to jail.
If you want to hang out with us and hear more of our conspiracy theories, we are going to have a listener party next week. Join us along with our special guest from ESPN, Keyshawn Johnson. That's Wednesday, May 11th. So next Wednesday at St. Arnold Brewery. We're going to be broadcasting live from noon to 9. So come hang out with us. Great beer, great food, door prizes. Chef Ryan, actually at St. Arnold, came up with a special pizza for Keyshawn called Just Give Me the Damn Pizza. So Wednesday, May 11th, listener appreciation party at St. Arnold Brewery. We certainly hope to see you there. More after the break.
Loaded, ready, rule.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5. You're listening to Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
All right, we're chugging along on a Tuesday. I'm Vanessa Richardson. He is Paul Gallant. Sean Mapes behind the glass. Lorenzo, we're going to get to you in a second. Let's start out with Lenny on the line talking about the Buffalo Stadium. What's up, Lenny?
Good morning. Hey, was that Buffalo thing put to a public vote, do you know?
Oh, great question.
It doesn't seem like it was. They put out a public poll, and the poll said, I think it was 63% of New Yorkers disapproved of it. And New York is an interesting state because there is such a huge population of New Yorkers that live in New York City, and they basically want nothing to do with the actual upstate side of things. So maybe if this was specifically done in, like, Western New York, maybe the poll would have ended up being different. But, Lenny, from what I know, no, there was no vote that was made over this. This was just granted by the government to the Buffalo Bills.
I'm from Columbus, Ohio, and we had in like year 2000 or 1999, they put it up to a vote to put a thing on to make taxes to pay for a new stadium to attract Hartford Whalers, who became the Carolina Panthers. Well, it was voted down, so, you know, they can come begging for it, but I don't understand how they can do that without a vote.
It's a great point.
You would think that would be the case,
yeah,
Lenny.
Yeah, it's a great call.
But then you realize that maybe there aren't as many things that we, the people of the United States, actually have.
It comes down to the mayor and the governor in a room with Pegula making this decision, which I think a lot of people would say is unfortunate.
All you do is elect people? Oh, well, that sucks. I don't get to determine what these elected people do. Great.
We're going to take
USA.
Another call. Yeah, we have Lorenzo talking about, ooh, I love a good theory.
Let's go.
Lorenzo, you're on Vanessa and Gallant. Give me your Daniel Snyder theory.
Hey, what's going on, guys?
Hey.
Keep up the good work.
Thank you.
So, in the name of Tim Hat Theories,
yeah.
Daniel Snyder, think what you want to about the Washington Redskins. They're very relevant and make a lot of money for the NFL, right? So the thing is, with that much money and being in that position for as long as Daniel Snyder has, those two things come with a lot of information. So where all these people are like, you know, these owners, you know, well, he crossed the final line when he sold out, when he took a money away from the owners. I think that in Ten Hat Theory, the owners might be a little apprehensive to come out because Daniel Snyder doesn't really look like he's cut from that cloth of keeping things tight to the vest when the pressure gets on him. So if this investigation goes too far and people start pointing too many fingers, I feel like Daniel Snyder could say, well, I'm on my way out. I'm bringing down this whole show.
Yeah, that's a great point. That's a great point. So thanks for the call, Lorenzo. So he's saying basically that Daniel Snyder knows about things about the other owners that they wouldn't want revealed.
Yeah.
I don't hate that theory.
Yeah.
I don't hate
mutually
that theory.
Mutually assured destruction.
Yeah. I don't hate that theory.
Well, I mean, they all have something.
They definitely
do. Whether
it's
Robert Kraft and some of the places that he goes to, Jerry Jones potentially having
a child. Another child.
Wedlock.
And you know, we haven't heard anything else about that. Interesting.
I mean, shoot, you could go down the list. I guess the good thing is you don't really think that Cal maybe has something great in his closet.
I think the owner
Cal seems like a nice guy.
Cal McNair, I think, is genuinely a good guy. I think Jim Crane is super low-key as well. Tillman Fertitta seems like he's had some fun in his past lives, but I don't know that he's wild and out right now.
I have...
Be careful, Paul. Be careful.
Yeah,
I think we're thinking the same thing.
Wait, what are you guys thinking?
The University of Houston athletic program has gotten a lot better with Tillman Fertitta's hands-on. Have the Rockets! 713.
Oh...
I'm just gonna stop there.
You'll have to explain to me I literally don't know what you're getting at.
I don't think he's
funding the
I don't think anything. I don't have thoughts.
He funded Fertitta Center for University of Houston.
Right, he did.
So
yeah.
What are you saying? What else is happening?
I'm not saying anything else.
What are you suggesting?
I'm not suggesting anything.
Sean, I wasn't suggesting anything.
I'm just talking with my mouth.
I'll just read a headline. This is not Sean Mapes saying this.
Sure.
This is a headline from Clutch Points.
Okay.
Rockets Tillman Fertitta family has deep mob ties.
Oh,
Whoa. Okay. I didn't know that.
Didn't know that either.
I'm
disavowing that. No,
okay.
Sean Mapes said it.
No,
it was Sean.
I was reading a headline.
Sean Mapes read the headline.
All right, well, what I'm getting at is
Clutch Points was the one who put the headline
out.
That's
true.
So the mob guys, if you exist, which that's not real. The mafia, no, not real.
The barrels found. Guys, how about the barrels found at the bottom of the, did you see that article I sent you?
No. Wait, hang on.
The bodies found in the barrels that are over 40 years old.
Oh, the bodies
near
in
Vegas.
The barrels. Oh, well, I mean.
Let's go.
Duh.
Can't wait for the dental records on this episode of Forensic Files.
Murder is mean.
Murder is very mean.
Yes.
Don't do it.
Yeah, don't murder people, guys. How do we get this one back on the rails?
Where are
we going?
Yeah, here's where we're going, and there's literally no transition, so I'm not even going to try to make one. What's on our rundown, and a discussion that I think is interesting, because there were so many major moves in the NFL. We know that this was the year of the wide receiver being on the move, etc. The NFL's most intriguing new duo.
Ooh.
There's a lot. There's been a lot of movement. My vote, who I'm most excited to see, is Derek Carr and Devontae Adams, because we have had so much made of the fact that these guys were college teammates, the fact that they're friends, so much hype. And Adams had one of the greatest quarterbacks ever, and he chose to leave that situation. It wasn't about money. He chose because the Packers offered the same amount as the Raiders. He chose to leave that situation, so he needs to make sure he is the guy. I'm excited to see Carr and Adams. What say you for the NFL's most intriguing new duo? And, of course, we want to know what you guys think.
Intriguing can provide a variety of different answers, so I want to see Aaron Rodgers with new second-round rookie Christian Watson out of North Dakota State. How mad is Aaron Rodgers going to get at Christian Watson if Watson is not the guy? And by the way, he's a wide receiver coming from North Dakota State. North Dakota State's a juggernaut in college football, but that's at the 1AA level, at the championship subdivision level. Are they going to be able to step up into the NFL, a guy like him, and succeed? I don't know. Another one I will throw out there, and there's a theme to all of these. Okay, Ryan Tannehill loses A.J. Brown. Is Ryan Tannehill with the wide receiver from Arkansas that they just drafted?
Treylon Burks.
Thank you. Are they going to be able to have anywhere close to the same kind of rapport that Tannehill had with Brown. Brown came onto the NFL and he was good.
So that's
right
intriguing
away.
To you. You want to watch how that plays out.
Because I feel like with Adams and Carr, you know that there's probably going to be a rapport, you know?
Yeah, but is it going to be what it was with Rodgers?
I mean, doubtful, because Rodgers is just a better player.
I'll give you another one. Jerry Jeudy with Russell Wilson. I think in Denver. I think that's a duo that I'd like to see what they can do, and I think that's going to determine a lot of their success.
How about this one? Jeudy and Wilson's a good one. I think Judy's a hell of a player. How about this one? Terry McLaurin and Carson Wentz with
the
Washington Commanders, of which Daniel Snyder has driven the value down. To our caller's point, this was something I wanted to touch on really quickly. To our caller's point, yeah, Washington used to be the most valuable franchise in the NFL. And if you take a look, like, I actually just looked up in the headlines, where are they value-wise? So their value has gone down, like, rather alarmingly. Yeah. Not like they're losing money, but their value ranking as far as NFL teams and American teams has, like, consistently gone down over the past 5 years pretty significantly. Because they used to be heads and tails above everybody, including the Dallas Cowboys. Carson Wentz and Terry McLaurin would be interesting. And one last one. This one, because... Look, you know that Cooper Kupp's his number one weapon, but Matt Stafford just brought in Allen Robinson.
True.
And Allen Robinson, I feel like, is as good, if not better, than Robert Woods, who I really like a lot, too. Robert Woods, who now he goes to, he went to Tennessee, so.
Yeah, 45-48 on our text line says Tyreek Hill and Waddle in Miami. Yeah. That will be interesting to see, too. I don't know that that's going to be...
Tua's the problem.
Yeah, Tua. Yeah,
that's a great combination of wide receivers.
Right,
but we're looking for the quarterback wide receiver combo.
Yeah, but so Tua and Tyreek Hill, I think, is the one that will be super intriguing. But a lot of movement among the wide receivers that creates that kind of new narrative of who's going to click, who's going to have that chemistry, and who could be a letdown. I think at the whole Adams and Carr thing, if they're not really really great, it's almost a failure just because of how much has been hyped up about their chemistry. All right, coming up on Vanessa and Gallant, we'll get to our Garbage Time segment. And yes, we're talking about the Met Gala. That's next.
This is Heisman Trophy winner, College Football Hall of Famer Eddie George, and you're listening to ESPN 97.5.
Breaking down the Houston sports scene with V and Pauly G on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
We've had some good answers on the most intriguing duo that you want to see next year. 8022 says A.J. Brown and Smith in Philly. Mm-hmm. 5691 says Michael Pittman will be a top-tier receiver now that he has a quarterback that can throw both accurately and deep. That'll be interesting to see. Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of movement.
Definitely. A lot of movement. Definitely. And look, that's what has made this offseason better than most other ones. It feels a lot more like basketball's off season. Now it finally has come to a conclusion for the most part. I mean, you'll see a couple of guys that have been hanging around as free agents, a couple of them ex-Texans. Tyrann Mathieu was one of them, but Dwayne Brown and Jadeveon Clowney are hanging out, still waiting to sign with teams. And they can sign now, and it won't work against the team's potential compensatory pick formula. But yeah, it's been a fun offseason thus far, that's for sure.
Do you do the Met Gala? Do you watch? Do you analyze? Do you
No.
do the fashion?
I see everyone that's wearing things at the Met Gala, and I'm like, you have to be messing with me.
I guess there's a theme every year.
Sure.
I didn't realize what.
Look like
know.
A pretentious jackass, maybe. Yeah, that seems to be the theme every single
Paul
year.
Paul loves rich people.
Look, it's great to be rich. This, though, it's like you're trying to do something that is not cool. Like, wow, look at my outfit. Here I am at the Met Gala with a bunch of rich people. I'm showing off my individual sense of style. And I look like, I don't know, the person that Chris Tucker plays in the Fifth Element, you know?
I don't. I haven't seen it, but yeah, sure.
In an upset, I have.
Wow.
Thank you. The some dated references are a little too dated. I realize.
I need
that
to
front.
See the Fifth Element.
One of the last roles where Bruce Willis has hair.
Yes.
Oh.
Yeah.
So it is older.
Underrated movie. But I watch all these people and I see Russell Westbrook essentially wearing a dress.
It is. It's a skirt. It's a skirt.
I thought the same thing when NBA players started wearing all these new fashions. I thought they were just screwing with us because they thought it would be funny since they had that dress code that was enacted where they all had to wear suits. They thought it would be funny to just I don't know, wear what Russell Westbrook once wore, where he had a shirt with like a circle hole in it. So it looked like it was like man cleavage was all there for the world to see. You know, you could see his underboob.
Somebody replied to a picture of him with him wearing one of the old Laker girls uniforms with the long skirt.
Yeah, and we're talking old Laker girls.
Like, very funny.
Like the 1960s Lakers girls.
So a lot of Met Gala pictures, chatter on the internet yesterday. I'm not a big fashion person in general, but this brings us to a discussion about ugly uniforms and mascots in sports in general. And there are a lot of them. Now, some of them are just ugly color schemes for teams, and then some of them are particularly ugly uniforms year by year. So what say you?
I hate the Space City Astros uniforms.
What?
Yep, hate them.
Wow.
No contrast in the pants, and the hats look like crap.
They set like a record for...
I know. Everyone likes them. This is probably the hill that I will die on, but the hats look terrible, and I don't like that the pants are the same color as the jersey.
So you think there needs to be a contrast?
Yeah, there's got to be a little contrast there. And people have said, oh, well, it's supposed to be the flight suit. I get that. Whatever. I just don't like it.
I didn't even catch on to that.
I don't like it.
I like the tequila sunrise socks that come with it.
I do like the socks.
The tequila sunrise socks complement it in a nice way.
But the tequila sunrise jerseys are better, and they should just wear those more.
I will agree with that as well. For me, it's forever and always the San Diego Padres, because the yellow and brown color scheme is disgusting. It is pee yellow and poop brown. And it doesn't matter what logo you stick on it. It doesn't matter the color scheme. I don't know who came up with those colors. But you have the spectrum of colors, and you can repeat some of the color schemes, a little bit of other teams. Not too much, though. You want to be individual. And they chose pee yellow and poop brown for the Padres. Forever and always the worst. It's disgusting. I don't know how you're a Padres fan. I don't care if you live in San Diego. You have to pick a different team because the colors are so gross.
Yeah, I can't argue with any point of that. That's a great one. The Utah Jazz are moving to new uniforms next year. They've apparently been leaked. And they're like black and like neon yellow. I don't know.
Don't like it.
I don't know how that works. I mean, it's weird enough that there's a team called the Jazz in Utah. They don't even allow caffeine there. I'm glad that the Rockets moved on from their melting communism look, which I thought was awful and just a blatant attempt to pander to China.
For me, it's always the color rush uniforms are really bad. I showed you a picture on the break of the 2016 Jags color rush uniforms.
Oh, God.
And do you remember the Seahawks color rush uniforms, the really lime green ones?
I like the neon green ones.
Oh, God.
I like those.
Disgusting.
But that's because the Seahawks used to have great uniforms, and they went to this like postmodern Canadian Football League look. There's a bunch of teams in the NFL, the Dolphins, the Jets, the Titans and the Seahawks, where they had good looks recently, and they decided to go away from them. Like, I thought the Titans with the white helmet, that was a good look.
I didn't hate it.
This with the blue helmet, it's awful.
I've never liked any of the Titans uniforms. They always look kind of like Kmart NFL team to me, where it looks like they saved a lot of money.
Is it the blue on blue?
I think that, and then even like their logo with the white, and like the helmet with the logo on it, I'm just like, it feels like they just kind of copy and pasted the logo and then put two different kind of blues together and called it a uniform.
Yeah, it's the two blues.
And the fact that they're the Tennessee Titans and their logo is just a T
that's a great point.
Is in a circle and flaming. That's it.
That's it.
That's the logo.
The Clippers.
Cleveland Browns unis are awful, says 2141 on the text.
Yeah. Yeah, but the Browns, to be fair, not given a lot to work with.
You're right, yeah. I mean, at least it's better than the Padres.
Yeah, the Padres. 2141 says Iowa State ketchup and mustard. It's another bad one, too.
Iowa State
reminds me of McDonald's.
They used to have a look that was cool, and it was more red and white. And they had on the logo on the side of their helmets, it was a cyclone with a little cardinal in the middle of it. It actually they were cool uniforms, and now they're like a low rent ripoff of USC.
No, yeah, Iowa State's uniforms are just USC's uniforms, and Iowa's uniforms are just the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Yep.
That's a great point.
But at least the Pittsburgh Steelers look is a good.
Yeah,
look.
At least it looks cool.
Someone brought up. Actually, check this. I brought this up. I think the Los Angeles Clippers new look is awful too. It's just so bland and like this weird like LAC look on a basketball.
We want to know what you guys have to say.
Steve Ballmer's rich, and they look like a low rent operation.
Dallas, as a Cowboys fan, am I allowed to say our unis are basic? Yeah, it's a popular brand, though.
You can't.
And that's... I actually, as much as I hate the Cowboys, think they have a great uniform.
I think
the simple star,
yes.
And it's obviously iconic. All right, and with that, we move to our garbage time segment.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I love trash.
garbage time.
It's garbage.
Starts now.
I'm the trash man.
This is garbage.
Pete Davidson, at 28 years old, has fallen for a cougar in Kim Kardashian.
That's weird to think of, but you're right.
And
he's only 28.
He is only 28.
Damn.
And he's with a 41-year-old. I mean, I don't hate that.
I don't either.
He has her children's initials tattooed on him now. That's so weird.
This went viral yesterday, and someone was like, leave the kids out of this. I don't know. I think it's kind of funny. Kanye's acting like a crazy person. So you know what? If he's going to continue to act like a crazy person, then continue to troll the man.
Conspiracy theory. Kris Jenner is behind all of this.
Yes. Duh.
The devil works hard, but Kris Jenner works harder.
That's 100% accurate. I'm not even going to look into that. You were right. That is 100% happening. She is creating plot lines.
I mean, you have to remember, the family wasn't... Their fame had fallen off when the dad died and then resurfaced after she did a sex tape with Ray J.
Right. So Kim probably said to Pete, you want all this?
Right.
You got to get my children's names tattooed on your neck.
Meanwhile, a British man whose penis fell off regrew it on his arm and it's now larger. Good for him.
It's 2 inches larger.
Biggest comeback ever?
Legitimately. I'm curious as to how many people listening right now would be willing to let their schmember fall off so that they could grow a new one and it's potentially bigger. Would any of you be willing to do that? I obviously would not be willing to do something like that.
You said obviously would not. I thought you were going to say obviously.
No. Oh, my God. I would not. No, I could not go a day without that. And I mean, you have to go, like, how long do you have to go with that on your arm? And
he went 6 years.
That's just, no. Mm-mm.
6 years.
Of wearing long sleeve shirts.
Right. Well, apparently, so this is what's really funny about this. Because he would apparently just roll with it when it fell off of his arm. There's a documentary.
Oh my God.
The documentary, The Man with a Penis on His Arm.
Creatively named. Imagine, that's the best we could do.
This is what he said. People ask me about it. When they see me at the pub, and of course people make jokes. But I get it. It's not every day you see a man with a penis on his arm. Of course I see the funny side. I have to. It's something to tell the grandchildren, isn't it? And I guess at one point he was in a store and... like an old lady was like trying to reach around him to grab something from the
she
aisle.
Touched the pee-pee.
And it just fell off. It fell out of his sleeve and just like on her arm. And she's like, and apparently he had some like British.
Imagine
to her.
Telling your grandkids that and they're like, yeah, that's right. Grandma has dementia because she thinks a penis fell off on her at the store. Colts owner Jim Irsay made a hilarious appearance on the Pat McAfee show. He talked in part about the disgust he felt after the Colts lost to the Jags, saying he, quote, wanted to call the plane at halftime. But he also had an interesting quote about his disappointment in futuristic technology.
You know, it's just like I'm frustrated with flying cars because I'm obsessed with that. Like, I want a flying car.
And me too.
What I got is my phone instead. It's like, well, the future is on your phone really right now. It's not like literally in front of you. You can't get into a flying car. But, you know, your phone has it all. It's like, I don't want this phone. I'm not going to have this phone 14 hours a day like you young people do. No, thank you. Like, I'm not from that generation. But, you know, give me a flying car.
Don't give Jim Irsay a flying car. Well, are you kidding?
Well, here's the thing. I think his point...
With his garbage bag of drugs?
No. But the point is with futuristic technology like the Jetsons, they did make us think we would have flying cars, and instead we have phones.
George Jetson didn't have a bag of a garbage bag full of cocaine and narcotics that he was driving around
meanwhile, there's
the
a
city with.
Fictosexual man who married a hologram says he can no longer speak with his wife after her software expires.
Right, they just stopped making her software anymore. So the guy spent like basically $18,000 on a wedding with a hologram, and now his wife can't talk to him anymore.
The 16-year-old
sounds like a real marriage.
A hologram lived in a 2800 desktop device. Poor guy.
Yep.
Getting a divorce.
Well,
yet still has had more. Effective and successful relationships than you and I. All right, that's another Tuesday on Vanessa and Gallant. Thank you to our producer, Sean Mapes. Of course, you can hear Joel Blank, Jeremy Branham. They are up next with the Killer Bees on 97.5.
Peace.
ESPN 97.5.